And we are live, everybody. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Please say hello if you're new here. Nice to see everyone on this Tuesday, on this Taco Tuesday. We've got a lot of news to get to. Of course, the beating of the war drums at the Pentagon continues, despite no evidence that Iran was involved in the attack that killed three American soldiers. We're getting more details and some fishy details, actually, about how this whole thing unfolded, but we'll bring you that.
We're also going to talk about a NATO army, because NATO heads are saying they need a Schengen army, not just to, you know, trade bombs and bullets, but also people. This seems to be another way to get a European-wide army, pull the UK back into Europe, maybe not for trading bread, but bullets. Yes, we're going to invite Jim Ferguson on, politician, to talk about this, something we've been warning about.
Yeah, that's right. We're also going to talk about, well, something very interesting has been happening, and it's been happening over the past 2 years. Is there anything you guys can think of that's been happening over the past 2 years, and why in the world would embalmers, yes, people that prepare bodies around the world, are seeing something very startling when they are putting a body out to prepare it for a funeral service. And this is happening all around the world. We'll tell you about that. Is there anything that happened in the past 2 years that could be tying all of this together?
Well,
I don't know.
My subject today on Canadian hate science goes hand in hand with that, my friend. We have an author coming up, author of a book called Fisman's Fraud, about the hate science behind why Canadian politicians did what they did during the pandemic. I'm fired up about this book, you guys. Read it over the weekend. I want you to see this.
I thought maybe.
Read the book and get fired up with me. Yeah.
I thought maybe you're talking about Taylor Swift's, you know, in her career just completely taken off in the last 2 years. Is that what you're referring to, maybe?
I know where your head is at. We'll try to fix his head as Redacted starts right now.
David during that music was stretching like this. Like, I saw him stretching and then flexing, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, if you're sitting at a computer, you know, you gotta work them out. You gotta work them out. I was just lifting weights before the show. Where's the gym?
You're busted, and I like it. So everybody, do a little stretching. Take your multivitamin because Redacted is on fire today.
Anybody know where the vet is? Because I got a couple sick pythons.
All right. Hey, we've got a busy show for you. Scott Ritter is going to be joining us here in a few moments, and we're going to be talking with him about what's going on in Iran, and because we got some new updated information on Iran's nuclear program from a former UN weapons inspector who's saying, yes, Iran is ready. They have nuclear weapons right now. So we're going to ask Scott Ritter about that, former UN weapons inspector, in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about our newsletter. So if you'd like to subscribe to our daily newsletter, you can do that. It's the best newsletter in the world. I got a nice email from one of our listeners today and said, hey, I've been watching you for a long time. I finally signed up for the newsletter, and I have to say, wow, it's on point. It was really well written. It made me laugh, and I felt really informed. It was a very nice email, so thank you so much. That's what we try to do. Every morning, you get the Redacted newsletter sent right to your inbox. We cover about 4 or 5 of the big stories of the day. Natalie and I write it ourselves. We don't have a team of people. It's just us, and we kind of go through and find the stories we think are most important to start your day. Some things you might have missed while you were sleeping, we give you some market updates, some news about what's going on with gold, silver, what's happening in the markets, and Bitcoin, and all of that, just, you know, if you invest in those things. And then you're off to the races. You can start your day. Anyway, it's totally free. Just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and you'll receive a welcome email. It might go to your spam folder. So just grab that, bring it over to your inbox. So Wednesday morning is the first morning that you'll get the newsletter. Again, once again, just go to redacted.inc. Well, Iran has enough uranium to make 12 nuclear bombs in 5 months, warns a former UN weapons inspector, David Albright. And the Biden administration appears ready to do whatever it takes to silence Iran with the help of members of the United States Congress, who are, of course, banging the drums for war, have already given the president authorization to attack Iran. And, of course, this goes back to 2002 and even before that, the idea of hitting Iran preemptively. Israel has been pushing for this for decades. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu sitting in front of the United States Congress when Denis Kucinich asks him this question about preemption. Listen.
You talk about a network of terror. Are there any other nations that you would recommend that the United States launch preemptive attacks upon at this point?
No, the issue is not... first of all, are there other nations that are developing nuclear weapons? Yes.
Should we launch any other preemptive attacks?
First, let me say what they are, and then let me make a suggestion how to proceed.
Thank you.
The answer is categorically yes. The two nations that are vying, competing with each other, who will be the first to achieve nuclear weapons, is Iraq and Iran. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing Iraq in the development of ballistic missile systems that they hope will reach the eastern seaboard of the United States within 15 years. So I guess that doesn't include California, but includes Washington. But what it does, a third nation, by the way, is Libya as well. Libya is, while no one is watching.
So Iraq, of course, that's why he's there pushing that. But Iran also, and oh, by the way, Libya, because we've got to get those guys. So two out of three already in hindsight. So one more on that list for us to take out. Former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter is here to assess all of this and more. Scott, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about, first of all, David Albright, former UN Weapons Inspector. Is he a former UN Weapons Inspector and he's now beating the drums? I find the timing of all of this very, very interesting, that Iran is about to have nuclear weapons. Maybe they already do. And we should probably hit them. We should probably attack them right now.
David Albright had a brief interaction with the International Atomic Energy Agency's Iraq inspection group. He was invited to participate in an inspection where they were reviewing documents that had been acquired after Hussein Kamal, the son-in-law, had defected. He's not an inspector. He has no inspection qualifications. He's an outside expert, in quotations we'll put, who came on one mission and has made a career of it afterwards, likening himself to people like myself who spent years planning missions, executing missions, and interacting with the international community about this. I just think if a guy has to falsify his resume to burnish his credentials, then you might want to think twice about the message. But let's focus on the message, not the messenger. This is a man who has been pushing for the violent disarmament of Iraq back in the day. He's a man who bought into a defector, Hidir Hamza, gave him a platform to lie about Iraqi nuclear weapons capabilities. He promoted Hamza's efforts to say that Iraq was pursuing a nuclear weapons program, had a nuclear weapons program worthy of war. David Albright has the blood of thousands of Americans and millions of Iraqis on his hands. He's not an innocent academic. He's not an objective observer. He's an advocate for Israeli policies of regime change in the region. And he's been advocating for conflict against Iran for some time now. He has been at the front of selling a falsified Israeli narrative about Iranian nuclear intentions and capabilities. It's clear to anybody who has a modicum of expertise on Iran's nuclear program that Iran is not pursuing a military program. Iran has made a decision to do that which it is permitted to do under Article 4 of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. I want to make that point to everybody. Iran is in violation of nothing. They're not even in violation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, because the United States and Europe The United States has backed out and Europe has failed to implement. So Iran has done what it is permitted to do in accordance with paragraphs written by the United States that, under the assumption that Iran would be the party in noncompliance. Iran is withdrawing from its obligations until which time the United States and Europe abide by their commitments. Iran is violating no law. They're doing what they're permitted to do under Article 4. They're doing that which they would be permitted to do when the JCPOA reached maturity in any event. So this is not a push for nuclear weapons. This is David Albright, providing a background chorus, so to speak, for Benjamin Netanyahu's ongoing song of war against Iran.
I think that's fascinating, a background chorus, because I found the timing of this to be pretty interesting, right? At the moment we hear Iranian-backed groups attack American soldiers in these bases, which, by the way, why do we have so many of these bases scattered around in these illegally occupied areas, whether it's Syria or Jordan or all over the place, right? Even in the New York Times, the Biden administration has admitted that, you know, it's only a matter of time before American forces in these regions are targeted or hit. Well, shocking. Shocking. They've been telling us for years they don't want us there. Why are we in these areas illegally in the first place? So it's only a matter of time, and the Biden administration admits this. They're sitting ducks. It's almost like they're putting them out there on purpose as decoy pigeons or something, waiting for these Iranian-backed groups to attack us, and that's a justification for us to do something to Iran. Am I wrong about that? Maybe it's just my cynical nature.
Well, in this case, remember, the Biden administration inherited this forced posture. This is something that began under the Obama administration. Of course, Biden was the vice president, but it was continued under Trump. This is an American policy, not a Biden policy, and it's a policy that makes no sense. But the United States, we project force into regions under very dubious claims of legitimacy. We have no legitimacy in to be on Syrian territory. We claim it's because we're seeking to destroy ISIS. But if you take a look at the Al-Tanf area, Area 55, I think they call it, we're there to actually use ISIS-affiliated Syrian tribal groups against the Syrian government. This is about, destabilizing the government of Bashar al-Assad as part of a larger policy of regime change, again, which Biden has inherited from Trump, who inherited it from Obama. And it's a policy that has gone, they've stopped actively pursuing it. So they're there doing nothing. That's the point I want to make. American forces are in this position illegally on Syrian territory, illegally. Everything they do is a war crime by definition. They're there with no mission, no viable mission. They've become nothing more than targets, not because the Biden administration wanted them to be targets, but because the Biden administration doesn't have the courage to do a policy review and say there's no reason for continued American presence. See, Americans, the government, we view it as a sign of the right thing. If we say, oh, maybe it's time to get out. Oh, no, you'll be attacked as weak. And of course, Biden is running for president. He doesn't want to be seen as weak. The weakest thing an American president can do is allow American soldiers to die for no justification, no just cause. Joe Biden is the weakest president imaginable, because not only have 3 American soldiers died, 34 wounded, but now he's talking about carrying out acts of retaliation that could expand this conflict. And if David Albright and Netanyahu get their way, it would mean a general war with Iran. And here's the kicker, which we would lose. We're not going to win this war. We can't even stop the Houthi from shutting down the Red Sea. The Iranians will shut down the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians will destroy every piece of American military infrastructure in the region. All those F-22s and F-35s that sortie out of Qatar air bases, those bases will be destroyed. Those planes will be destroyed. This is the inevitable outcome. I can write it right now, just like I could write what happened to the Ukrainian counteroffensive. Any military expert who takes a look at the correlation of forces knows America is not postured to win. So why are we getting involved in a military conflict that the military professionals know we will lose? Presidential politics. Joe Biden is putting his political ambition above the sanctity of life of the American service members.
It's absolutely disgusting, because how do you tell the families of those 3 that were killed? They were there illegally. They were they protecting America? Were they protecting America? Was it, you know, Red Dawn? We were invaded, at, you know, somebody at the southern border? No, no. They were there illegally. So to be able to go to the families of those three service members that were killed, the 34 that were wounded, and to say, you know, they were
died
killed.
For a cause.
They died for a cause. What cause is that? The political ambitions
there
of Joe
no
Biden.
Cause.
It's absolutely
no
disgusting.
Yeah.
And when you think about the larger mission now and what the Biden administration appears wants to do, I mean, you certainly have Lindsey Graham and other members of the Senate who in the past 48 hours have been all over Twitter, been pushing out messages saying we need to hit the heart of Tehran. We need to go at, we need to wipe them off the map. Those are the words of Lindsey Graham. We need to target and hit them harder than they've ever been hit before. So we need to go right at Iran. Iran says we had nothing to do with this attack. And so they've been looking for this justification, to my mind, for decades. And now, I don't know if this is the catalyst they'll use in order to do this, but this is the third of the members that they've been trying to take out. Iraq, Libya, this is the third. They've been wanting this one. So to me, is it an inevitability at this point, Scott, that they are going to go after Iran?
I don't think so. And I'll tell you why I don't think so. Because the U.S. military is not populated by idiots. There are professionals there who, regardless of their ideological motivations, they may, you know, believe in a strong American posture in the Middle East. They may support the anti-ISIS mission in Syria, all that. But they are professionals. And so they will, it's like a firefighter whose job is to put out the burning building. But if I roll up on the building and I look at it and I look at the nature of construction, the spread of fire, the smoke coming out, I'm going to go, that building's a loss. I'm not putting any firefighters in that building. It doesn't mean that I don't want to fight fires. It means that I'm not going to fight this fire because this fire will kill me. I'm going to lose this fire. The military professionals right now are taking a look at the correlation of forces in the region. Remember, once you start a war with Iran, let's just start with basic strategic lines of communication. Iran will be operating off of interior lines of communication, meaning they'll be fighting from their own territory. We, on the other hand, are projecting power thousands of miles away from our soil, thousands of miles or hundreds of miles away from any known base of support. We don't have sufficient force projected forward to inflict any meaningful harm on Iran. We will blow up a couple places, but then they'll hit us with everything they got. They will destroy our forward deployed bases. The Al Ubayd Air Base in Qatar will be eliminated. The Fifth Fleet in Bahrain will be eliminated. Any ships in the Red Sea and the Persian Gulf will be eliminated and sunk. And there's not anything we can do about it. And then what? We're supposed to project power forward. What power? We don't have a Navy capable of projecting power forward anymore. We have nothing. We spend nearly $1 trillion a year to produce a military that can't do its job in Europe, can't do its job in Asia, can't do its job in the Middle East. Thank God. Because to do their job in Europe, we'd be at war with Russia. To do their job in the Pacific, we'd be at war with China. And to do their job in the Middle East, we'd be at war with Iran. But we are weak. We are fundamentally weak. You know, this is the danger of overdoing deterrence. It's one thing to flex your muscle, but deterrence only works if the other side believes that you can follow through on the action that you're promising to do if they do something. What is becoming painfully clear to everybody is that the United States cannot follow through. Now, fortunately, Iran knows that even though the United States won't win a war with Iran, the United States can do sufficient harm to Iran. Iran is on the cusp of an economic recovery. They have a very bright future ahead of themselves. They're looking for peace, not war. This is why the Chinese helped broker reconciliation with China. This is why Iran is joining BRICS, joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They're looking for this great future of, you know, economic growth and prosperity. The last thing they want to do is throw it away in a war. So Iran's not looking for this war. It's America looking for this war. Iran will do what is necessary to convince the Americans that this is not a war worth fighting. And hopefully the military professionals will be pounding on the Oval Office door telling Biden, can't do this, boss. If you start this conflict, it's not going to end the way you want it to. And, you know, the military doesn't do politics, but maybe somebody on the National Security Council will say, this is the fastest way to guarantee that you will lose the election in November 2024, because you will be the wartime president who got his ass kicked by the Iranians.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears, I hope that's the case. Positivity. Absolutely, I hope that that's the case. Scott, great to see you. Thanks, as always, for your insight and your analysis from a real UN weapons inspector. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. And, you know, if you go back and watch an interview I did with Scott about 2 years ago, deep dive, where we talked about his past and we talked about the FBI and the CIA coming after him. Yes. And when he had a member of the CIA basically told him, like, you better fall in line with what the this administration wants you to do, mm-hmm. or they're going to ruin your life. They're going to come after you, yeah. and they're going to ruin your life. And that's what they tried to do for a lot of years. They don't like that he speaks the truth. So, you know, it's a fascinating history here. Someone in our chat room, Eric, let me see what Eric just said. Eric Lassen said, now it's rolling by me, said, you can bet that the Morrises don't make these hot takes at dinner, like around the dinner table, like that we don't talk about this stuff around the dinner table. This is a show for you, Eric says in our chat. And I just want to say something. First of all, you've never been to our dinner table. And second of all, this is exactly the kind of stuff that we talk about. Like
Our poor children.
When we talk, we're sitting there, you know, when they're like, oh, we've heard about this thing about climate and like the, you know, the oceans are rising and all this. Like, we're like, let's talk to you. So we talk to our kids about this stuff. We try to educate them about what's happening around the world. When they see all the Ukrainian flags everywhere and all the propaganda around that, those were many, many long dinner conversations about the propaganda that these governments force down their throats. So yes, our poor children get to hear all of these things on a nightly basis, not every night, but these are not like hot takes that we're just like putting out there for our show. These are things that we believe and read on a regular basis and study. And I wanted to, for our team. Yeah, just for our internal team here at Redacted. Like, we're like, oh my God, did you see what Joy Reid just did, caught on a hot microphone admitting the truth about the war and about the Biden administration? She was caught on a hot mic saying, oh, Biden, you're going to get us into another hot war. And then she comes back on camera and she goes right back into her narrative. And then she had to apologize for it. Like, that's literally something we were sharing amongst our group a few minutes ago. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just going to say, it's because we are actually passionate about the subjects that we cover. I mean, we go through, there are 1,000 different subjects we could choose every single day, and we go through and pick ones that we're really passionate about and care about. So,
yeah, you know, the other day my mom goes, oh, you're working so hard. Do you still want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, Mom, this is what I'm qualified for. Yeah, Hermione Granger needs to do this.
You weren't a research assistant, yeah. You know, getting your master's degree in studying this stuff. And
she's like, maybe you should relax a little. I'm like, I cannot.
Yeah. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to video call her every week and be like, let me tell you who's warmongering, Mom. She'll block me.
Yeah.
We have more news to get to. Speaking of warmongering, we're going to talk about how NATO is doing that, how they want to usurp the idea of a European army. Who's going to run that? Who will it answer to?
Well,
is there
to
any
Russia.
Chance it would be peaceful? No, of course, it's under the Trojan horse of an alarmist war with Russia. We're also going to talk about the rise of hate science in Canada. We have an author coming up. I mentioned that I read this book over the weekend called Fishman's Fraud. I liked it. I'm going to tell you that if you are interested in how Canadians were tortured based on junk science, you will be interested in this book. And we're going to talk to the author, and I'm excited a bit about that.
Can I just say something? A lot of people are saying we couldn't hear Philip. Can you guys not hear Philip? Are you muted or something?
My bad. Okay.
He told a really funny joke.
I forgot to. It was probably the funniest joke I've ever told. I mean, it was. I'm still laughing.
It's missed.
I don't know how you guys are keeping it together.
It's
professionalism.
Missed to history now.
Oh well, it's an inside joke now. All right. Well, let us tell you about our sponsors today, because that's not an inside joke, and then we're going to tell you all about war in NATO and Canadian hate science. But first, whether you have 3 minutes in the morning or 30 minutes, you can keep your face wrinkle-free with Gen 90. That's the new wrinkle treatment from GenuCell. It's the perfect Valentine's Day gift for yourself or your Valentine. Gen 90 instantly reduces the appearance of wrinkles anywhere you use it. Around the eyes, the forehead, the crow's feet, laugh lines, even the chin. It just starts working in seconds.
That's what I'm going to get you for Valentine's Day.
Oh.
And then I'm going to put a little card in there and be like, this is for your wrinkles. This is for your crow's feet.
For my, what my daughter calls my free Wi-Fi on my forehead. When I raise my eyebrows and it looks like free Wi-Fi signal. Yeah. I can do it again if you want to take my camera. Here's free Wi-Fi.
This is right here. Can I point to it?
Yeah, you can.
All right. Free Wi-Fi.
Am I go like that?
Yeah. It's a free Wi-Fi signal.
And I can't really
you need
do
GenuCell.
That's yeah. So you don't want free Wi-Fi on your forehead permanently. Then yeah, you should be using Gen 90. Gen 90 technology is luxurious, nourishing, and silk smooth. And best of all, it starts working in seconds because there's a tingle every time, so you know it. That's the reason that GenuCell has 400% customer loyalty, more than other skincare brands. There is a special Valentine's Day sale on right now at GenuCell.com. And of course, it's included in the bestseller package. So before you go overseas to get harsh procedures for thousands of dollars, try Gen 90 first. Make your fine lines and wrinkles disappear wherever they are and before you even leave the room. And for Valentine's Day, order Gen 90 with the most popular package for over 70% off. And you get free shipping and Valentine's spa box with every order. So right now, go to GenuCell.com/redacted. One more time, that's GenuCell.com/redacted. Free shipping on all orders. GenuCell.com/redacted. NATO is trying to cut the red tape to mobilize a European army by creating what they call a military Schengen. Would this be creation of the European army that so many bodies of power seem to want? Could they get away with this under the guise of anything other than the warning of an impending doomsday with a war with Russia? Jim Ferguson joins us today. He's a former parliamentary candidate and businessman. Also, he's the founder of Freedom Train International, a free speech platform, freedom all around platform. Thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on Redacted.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be on with you and Clayton. Natalie, thanks for having me.
So do you think that this is a military corridor? This is an attempt to create a European army because England and Britain would be dragged right back in to what they exited through Brexit, right?
Well, as you know, I was a Brexit parliamentary candidate. I fought in the European parliamentary elections and, of course, in the general election towards the end of 2019. We were fighting for Brexit. We got a kind of a Brexit. But what nobody knew at that point, or at least not very many people knew, certainly the public weren't aware of it, is that Theresa May, the former Prime Minister, had already done a deal with members of the European Union, or I should say the members of the European Commission, because people like Thierry Breton and others had made it very clear that you can have your vote for Brexit, but as far as your military is concerned, as far as your intelligence services are concerned, we want to take that over. And she agreed. And instead of it being sort of classed as a separate European army, what they're cleverly doing is they're taking over their member states' militaries, and they also want to take over Britain's military. But it gets worse, Natalie, because they're not just looking for all three strands of our military, the British Army, the Royal Navy, and the Royal Air Force. They want our security apparatus as well. They want control of MI6, and they want control of MI5. GCHQ, our listening post in Cheltenham, and they even want control of our entire policing services as well. And they want to add that to a new rising power in Europe that is controlled effectively by Ursula von der Leyen. And I said some months ago that this was actually happening, and I warned that there would be conscription for the British people. And just within the last few days, we've had politicians in the Conservative government coming out and saying, yeah, we might need to have a civilian army. We might need to call up people. We've got this terrible war with Russia that's coming. Well, no, we don't. Russia is not interested in going to war with NATO. They're not interested in going to war with Britain. It seems that the globalists that are in charge of our respective countries, including Sunak and Hunt, these are the prime ministers and the chancellor in the United Kingdom, as well as other member states of NATO that are run by globalists, yes, they do want to have a war with Russia. They've completely failed in Ukraine. but they're not going to leave it at that. They're going to drag everybody else into what I see coming as a military conflict.
So should we make a distinction between this NATO move and the European Union move, or do you think they're one and the same, sort of two sides of the same coin?
Well, what they're doing is they're looking at winding down NATO, but they can't wind down NATO until they have the new European military alignment. And by the way, this is known as military integration, or PESCO. And this has been known about by quite a number of people, but what a lot of the Tory grandees, the Conservative grandees that went along with this initially thought, they thought they were going to get defence contracts for their own constituencies. That's not actually what's going to happen, because the integration is going to give the European Union one purpose only, and that is to decide where the bombs and the guns and the bullets and the tank rounds are going to get manufactured. They will have one procurement source and one only, and it won't be in Britain. And indeed, it gets worse than that, because they will decide who gets the order of supply. So Britain might find themselves very, very far at the back of the line, as our friends in America call it, or the back of the queue, as us Brits call it. And it's a bad move for Britain. It also means that German or French generals, or those involved in the new command structures, will actually be deciding where British troops are sent. And our parliament, our sovereign parliament, and our people would have effectively no say in the matter, and could, in fact, be called up to fight the Russians.
Right. Just yesterday, over the weekend, actually, Zelensky gave an interview in the German media saying, you know, Germany, we got them. Like, they're on our side. They do what we want. And so Germany controls Europe. So the rest of Europe is good. What they're worried about now is American politics. So, you know, that shows the temperature of how the rest of Europe would go, because Zelensky is so close to Germany. Just over the last few days, NATO's European logistic chief, Lieutenant General Alexander Solfrank, advocated for this military Schengen. He called it a military corridor where, you know, throughout Europe, we could just pass along some bullets and bombs. But what gave me pause was he also said personnel. And so who then is in charge of a Schengen-wide military? And would that pull back in the European, or I'm sorry, England?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the people that are running our government is called the Conservative Party, but they're only Conservative in name only. I'm a former Conservative parliamentary candidate, and I know that they are completely infiltrated by World Economic Forum globalists who take their orders and policies and instructions from Klaus Schwab and the other globalist institutions, being the World Health Organization and the United Nations. So yes, absolutely, they want war with Russia, and they are very willing to sacrifice as many people as they can to get their goals done. But I actually been watching the rollout and the comments of all the talk that's been going on. I don't think the people in Britain are wanting a war. I don't think they're ready for it. And as a lot of people are saying, if these globalists really want a war so much, let globalists like Richie Sunak pick up a rifle and Grant Shapps and all these other warmongers, let them go and fight the Russians and see how they get on. Send their sons and their daughters to fight and die in a battlefield somewhere. The ordinary people in Russia, the ordinary people in the United Kingdom are not enemies. It's the globalists who are causing this. And the reason they are so against Russia is because Vladimir Putin didn't go along with their new world order. He was part of it until he realized that he would have to sacrifice Mother Russia on the altar of globalism. And he walked away and said, no, he stands with his own people. That's why they dislike him so much. And that's why they won't let it drop. It's a power struggle, a global power struggle that's in play here. And there are many and complex factors to it. But of course, ultimately, in any war, it's the people themselves who suffer and die. And that, to me, is completely unacceptable.
Yes. Yeah. And so I feel like people are increasingly rejecting this Russia's the bad guy. We are going to war with Russia. And as it seems to me, the people reject it, politicians are screaming it louder and louder. And the media is totally complicit. Just today, there was a Wall Street Journal article that blew my mind, saying three ways that the United States could retaliate against Iran. It was not an opinion piece. It was presented as news, like, here's what we need to do next for war. I cannot, I I can't wrap my head around it. What do you think the temperature is in the UK about accepting or rejecting a war with Russia?
Oh, I have no doubt about it that the vast majority of people would be very much against it. The globalists are trying very hard to sell it, and they are failing. Even David Cameron, the former British Prime Minister, had to go back on maybe 2 or 3 days later and say, oh, well, we didn't really mean conscription. We didn't really mean we were going to call up our young men and women and send them off to get slaughtered on the fields of Ukraine. But that's exactly what they meant. Let's not be under any shadow of a doubt. And you are absolutely right. I mean, it's news channels like Redacted that get the truth out. And I pay tribute to you and to Clayton for the work that you're doing, because without you, the mainstream media would control the narrative. They are bought and paid for by the globalists, people like Bill Gates, people like George Soros. They're all involved and they control the narrative. But I actually believe they're losing the information war. And and it's directly tied into the fact that at the last World Economic Forum Davos meetings, their primary focus wasn't on stopping war or curing cancer or stopping world hunger. No, it was in misinformation and disinformation. In other words, if you have a different viewpoint or a different narrative, they want to close you down. They want to censor you. And that's why Freedom Train International is pushing back so hard in multiple countries. We are pushing for the truth. We're pushing back against the globalists. We don't want war. We want peace and prosperity for people. We've seen enough conflict, but it's time that the globalists were removed from our governments, because they are causing nothing but problems for everybody, regardless of which country they have infiltrated.
Right. So it matters absolutely, what information you consume, what information you share, and who you vote for at this point, because people currently in power are marching to the beat of the war drum. And thank you for saying those nice things about Redacted. And thank you for your time. It's always wonderful to talk to you. You can follow Jim Ferguson on X and also your site, Freedom Train. Let me get it right. You say it. It's freedomtraininternational.org. Is that correct?
That's spot on, yeah. And Jim Ferguson UK. So it's at Jim Ferguson UK on X. And I say these compliments because I mean them. And you guys really do some great news posts and recordings. And I watch you guys all the time. So I'm always very pleased to be on with you. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for coming on Redacted. See you again soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jim. Very kind of Jim to say that. And
that was nice.
Follow Jim on X. And he's always a very wise, astute, an eye on the world. I'm calling out BS when he sees it. So he's a great follow and a great journalist. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. As a businessman and entrepreneur and a keen eye on what's happening in the world. One of our chatters just here a moment ago, Adrian, said, "Forgive my ignorance, but what is the Schengen zone? What is Schengen?" And that, there's nothing to be wrong about. No one ever has to apologize. I think it takes a brave person to say, "I don't know. I don't know something." So we're talking about the Schengen zone.
It was the European trade block.
I was going to answer
ahead.
It.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So
you're not asking me.
No, I wasn't asking you. So it's a small town in Luxembourg where it was written in 1985, where they came up with the Schengen Agreement. So there's 23 EU countries that are part of it, 27 countries total. So there are 4 countries that are not part of the EU that are in the Schengen zone. Mm-hmm. And it's a trade agreement. Yeah, that's what it simply means.
Right.
It's just basically a free trade agreement.
It's similar to the way that you can ship or sell something from, let's say, Idaho to California. The same rules would apply for trade inside European countries that otherwise wouldn't. So they
signed it in 1985 in Schengen in this small town, and then they did another version of it in 1990. So, yeah.
So what gives me pause about that news is that they want a military Schengen, not just to, like I said, ship bombs and bullets, but people sharing militaries, right? Mm-hmm. We know NATO already does that, but this idea of a military expansion under one NATO unit or worse, Ursula von der Leyen, gives me pause, clearly.
Could you imagine Ursula von der Leyen? She looks like she could be like an evil villain, like a Despicable Me movie, like mm-hmm. that would run the army. Like
yes.
She puts on a front, a nice front, but behind the scenes, of course, she's launching all sorts of crazy vaccine policies and going to launch wars around the world trying to attack Russia. That's Ursula von der Leyen. We've got more news to get to here on your Taco Tuesday. We're going to look at the science of hate in Canada. And we're also going to talk about you know, something has happened over the past few years. Embalmers around the world, you know, those who prepare bodies for funeral services, have been noticing something very, very strange. White, fibrous blood clots in the past 2 years. What's going on there? Why in the past 2 years? Yeah, we're going to speak with a data scientist and a major in the U.S. Air Force, retired, who noticed something odd as well and decided to take matters into his own hands, and Thomas Haviland, and started to reach out to all of these embalmers around the country and around the world to find out, are you seeing this as well? We're going to have the results of his study. We're going to sit down and talk with him today, just coming up a little bit later in the show. But first...
But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at The Wellness Company, because, as you know, the government's goal is dependency and control of our lives. If you have thought about what your emergency plan would be if the government continues to control your lives and control your access to resources, things that you might need, for instance, pharmaceuticals, 90% of them are produced outside of the U.S. So what happens in a global crisis? What happens in worst case scenario, which sometimes feels like is pending, the price of medications are on the rise and pharmacy shelves are empty. Well, not if The Wellness Company can do anything about it, because they want you to be prepared. They make a medical emergency kit that holds 8 life-saving medications that every American should keep in their medicine cabinet. It's like having a doctor at home. The kit contains antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics, plus a 22-page guidebook with instructions on safe usage. From tick bites to COVID to extreme bioterror events, every scenario is covered in the book. So it's up to you now. We're telling you one way to protect your family, to keep yourself stocked. It's important to look into it. No matter what your plan is, it's important to just have one. So check out The Wellness Company. Head on over to twc.health/redacted and grab yours before they're gone. That's twc.health/redacted. Using our code redacted saves you 10% at checkout. Be safe, be prepared, have a plan, and stay well. These kits are only available in the USA. Again, that's twc.health/redacted. Canada stripped away freedoms and tortured the unvaccinated based on hate science, which is not science at all. That is what one author says in her new book, Fisman's Fraud. Dr. Regina Wattiel joins us today. She's a Canadian statistician who took the time to read the studies that the media and the Canadian government was using to implement pandemic policy. And she found she could not, in fact, follow the science, no matter how hard she tried. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Natalie. Glad to be here.
Yes, I finished your book over the weekend, and I want to lay this out briefly so that our audience explains how you got there and just how serious this is in terms of academic misinformation. So in 2022, Canada insisted on keeping strict restrictions and vaccine requirements on its population, even though the science was beginning to show that the vaccine did not impact the transmission of COVID. And then right on cue, this study pops up saying that the unvaccinated are a threat to the vaccinated and responsible for the pandemic raging on. The media picks it up. Politicians use it to implement policy. It's a big hit. But you, in fact, read it and realized that it's not based on population data, which was available, but instead a mathematical model. And you hit the roof. You became what I call a dog with a bone. I love it. You went to the journal, the university, and even the police to point out this fraud. So take me through it, how you got here, and why it set your hair on fire so much.
Okay, well, the big part of the reason why I went after this is because my family was really impacted by the mandates and the restrictions. So in the fall of 2021, what we had here in Canada, we had vaccine passports. So the unvaccinated were banned from most public venues, you know, restaurants, gyms, movie theaters. The universities in order for university students to go on campus, they had to be vaccinated. And then the federal government had its vaccine mandates on federal workers. So in order to work, they had to be vaccinated, and they had to also impose travel restrictions. So we couldn't even travel by plane or train within our own country. It was a very isolating and very hard time for millions of Canadians. And then what happened in December at Christmas of 2021 is we had the Omicron surge. And so the COVID-19 cases soared to record heights despite the vaccines. 80% of the population was vaccinated. Still, we had these record surges, not only in cases, but in hospitalizations. And instead of admitting that these vaccines did not curb transmission, and instead of admitting failure, the government basically doubled down and started imposing even more restrictions. And so that was December 21 and in January 2022. And at the time, they were even imposed additional restrictions on unvaccinated truckers. So the world recalls that sparked the trucker convoy, the Freedom Convoy. And so the Freedom Convoy came in, and it put a lot of pressure on the provinces to relent on their passports and on the federal government to end their mandates and travel restrictions. So out of desperation, the federal government, Trudeau's government, imposed the Emergencies Act, where they basically trampled on the protesters and froze bank accounts and that type of thing, in order to, you know, stop the momentum, in order to salvage their restrictions. But they needed to do more. They needed the science. And so this is where FSMN comes in, because when you look at the actual, you know, government of Ontario data, Ontario is the largest province here in Canada. When you look at our data, the government's own data, it showed that the cases, the COVID cases, were dominated by the vaccinated, and that the vaccinated actually had higher incident rates than the unvaccinated. So, yeah, Trudeau was in desperate need of science and justification for his mandate. So in comes FSMN and his colleagues. And what FSMN does is he and his colleagues concoct a model to simulate fake data that shows the opposite of what the real data shows. Fake data that shows that it's the unvaccinated that have higher COVID-19 rates. And then they tried to pass off their fake results as fact. And they use this, fake results to scapegoat the unvaccinated, to provide justification for the federal government's mandates and restrictions. And then media ran with it. Media ran with it, warning everybody of the risk of merely hanging out with unvaccinated Canadians.
Which is so upsetting, because if you look at the study, they don't even use COVID-19 data at all. They say we simulated a respiratory infectious disease. And so the media should have known this is a simulation. They didn't seem to care. They just started running headlines that you put a compendium in your book of the list of headlines about how you're putting people at risk by going to the gym or getting on a train or an airplane or anything like that. So, it's a complete lack of duty by the media, but we sort of expect that. But the politicians who used it to implement policy is, I want to say, more upsetting. You seem upset by all of it, so you can tell me what you find the most upsetting.
Well, right away, when I looked at the study, I was well aware of what the data actually showed, so I knew right away that it was bogus. But it just wasn't going away. Everybody was running with it, and it was so clearly fraudulent. What I found most the worst was when the academic institutions, the research institutions, would not retract the study or set the record straight. They allowed it to continue, and that's really when I realized how corrupted the system is. It's not just the government here. You know, the government is like Trudeau's government is. There's a scandal every hour. It's terrible. And unfortunately, the courts are more than happy to look the other way. But by going through all the, trying to get the paper retracted and going through the different organizations, I realized how deeply involved the research institutions themselves were. And this was overt fraud. It was used to scapegoat the unvaccinated and prop up these horrible mandates. And they knew and they did nothing. And in fact, when you look at their involvement, especially the journal, it looked like they were actively involved in that deception.
So. Right. So you uncovered that the lead author, Fisman, has been on the payroll of Moderna and was given promotions. So was the university that published the paper. They were later given money by the Canadian government in order to continue to research the pandemic. Can you explain that conflict of interest and how that was not disclosed to the public?
Well, actually, a lot of these conflicts of interest are very public. So you look at David Fisman, and he's basically Canada's front man for pandemic modeling. So he was involved in modeling right in the beginning, and he advised all levels of government, you know, municipal, provincial, federal. And during this time, he has a lot of connections to various pharmaceutical companies. He served on a lot of advisory boards. And the university itself, University of Toronto, was in partnership with Moderna. They announced a big partnership with Moderna weeks before Fisman's study came out. And they've, you know, all universities here, a lot of universities in Canada received a lot of grant money from the government to combat things like vaccine hesitancy. So these things were actually pretty well known here. It's pretty open conflict of interest.
Now, you went bit by bit to people to get this retracted to the medical journal, the University of Toronto, I believe, and even the fraud department, I guess you would call it the Canadian version of the FBI, right? Can you tell us what happened at each of one of those?
Right. So first I went to the journal because they published the study and I asked for a retraction. And the journal was, it wasn't just me who went to the journal. Dozens of researchers and scientists in Canada asked for corrections to be made and that paper to be retracted. But they pretty much ignored me. So I went to the University of Toronto. And the University of Toronto has its own department for dealing with research integrity. So they had to answered, you know, they had to engage in dialogue with me. And at first they just tried to deny that they could deal with what Fisman did. So I actually had to go through their guidelines, research guidelines, and show them exactly in the policy where it shows that they have to do something. And then they just tried to deflect it. And then when I, you know, I went back to them, absolute proof this was fraud, backed them into a corner, and they just closed the file. So at that point, I went to the funding agency because this research was funded by the Canadian government. It was funded through CIHR. So I asked them to investigate the researchers and to set the record straight because it had been used in our parliament to justify extending the travel restrictions. And what happened with CIHR is the president of CIHR, along with the presidents of and CIRC and another department, they got together and they voted not to set the record straight and to not investigate. And at that point, I had been doing a lot of research into these organizations and I felt I had enough evidence to ask for a police investigation. So I wrote a 150-page evidentiary report and I sent it to the Ontario Provincial Police, their anti-rackets branch, and asked for an investigation. So they were not open to that.
Yes. You mentioned that the person you sat down with said, I've had four vaccines. I'm fine. Everyone's fine. This is not a big deal. So can you lay out why this was a big deal? Not just, oh, I couldn't go to the gym, but how there are recurring harms that happened. One, because the vaccine was not properly tested. And so we didn't have a risk-benefit analysis of taking the vaccine. We didn't have informed consent. And two, because of the way that the unvaccinated were scapegoated and kept from their freedoms.
Right. So there's a lot to unpack there because the vaccines, there's issues with them on a lot of levels. So Fisman's study dealt mostly with transmission. And so my book does knock that down a lot because it was obvious it doesn't curtail transmission at all. And without that, there really is no justification for mandates. And I go with that because if you have a potentially unsafe drug on the market, at least a potentially lethal, you know, drug, the best line of defense is to simply not take it. So if they take that right away and you're forced to take it, then you really don't have, you know, any defense against this. So in Canada, they made life unbearable for the unvaccinated. It wasn't just I couldn't go to the movies and I couldn't go to the gym or my kids, you know, couldn't go to restaurants. You know, my two oldest were in university at the time and they were varsity level athletes. Both of them were banned from the university campus. They were both kicked out of varsity sports. They've never competed again. It destroyed, you know, their varsity sports completely. And they were big athletes. They made it to nationals right before the pandemic was called. My youngest was isolated from everything. My husband, he's a federal employee. So the mandates affected him. And so he didn't work for most of 2022. My sister, she got fired from her position as a heart technician. I mean, it was devastating. And it completely changed our life, but not just our life. Like, you know, millions of people suffered under this and are still suffering. And when I went to, I took part in the trucker convoy. I went to that protest like 13 times. It was so uplifting because you had so many people together who finally had hope, you know, that something was going to be done. And I met a lot of people who suffered. I met people who were vaccinated and they were injured. And, you know, a lot of stories came out of that. So it was devastating. It's been very difficult here in Canada. And FSMN's study, sorry, do you want to?
No. Go ahead. Please go ahead.
I was just saying that FSMN's study didn't just scapegoat the unvaccinated. It didn't just justify the mandates that were happening at the time. You could see that it was laying down the foundation for you know, future mandates. It was giving you the framework for the pseudoscience as to why we should be able to mandate vaccines, not just now, but in the future. And I found that. So I feel I have to do something in order for my children to have a future here.
Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you one more question, and then I want to direct our viewers to, this will continue as a redacted conversation over on our community at redacted.inc. I want you to just, before we continue this conversation, define what you mean by hate science and what you think that the average person can do about it.
So a hate science, I'm looking at, you know, fraudulent science done for the purpose of harming a specific group of individuals. So in this case, we had fabrication and falsification for the purpose of scapegoating unvaccinated Canadians and basically taking away their rights and freedoms. So that was the purpose behind the science.
Okay.
And what we can do about it, what I've shown, and it's pretty clear here, is that the establishment is not going to investigate itself. The establishment is not going to stop doing what it's doing. So I think it's up to individuals and grassroots movements to do something about what is going on here. So I'm kind of hoping that my book, exposes what's going on, but also gives people a sense of validation and empowerment to do something the way I have.
Yeah, it's a really interesting read. I think that anyone who's interested in understanding how we've been collectively manipulated, Canada, one of the worst, will enjoy this book. So thank you for writing it and bringing it to my attention. We're going to continue this over on as a redacted conversation. So on this live platform tonight, I'm going to thank you for joining us. And then we'll continue the conversation after the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you.
And I want to say, you know, so many people in our chat, thank you to the doctor. So many people in our chat room right now are saying, I saw William Garrity said, thank you, Canada, for this amazing hero. Yeah, we should all be applauding this doctor. She is a hero. I mean, think about the tenacity that she had to call out the fraud of what these people were doing to people. I mean, I get chills just thinking about it. And I would hope everyone right now, like, you can even donate it to a library. Go and buy her book. You know, we're not like an affiliate or anything like that. Just go and buy her book wherever you want to buy it. It's called Fisman's Fraud. Let's make it like a number one bestseller. It's like $6.99, the paperback. Fisman's Fraud, F-I-S-M-A-N, Fisman's Fraud. You can find it. Go and buy it right now. Let's see if we can like shoot it up the charts on Amazon.
Now, one thing, you know, I have some outstanding questions that I'm going to ask her when we talk later in the redacted conversation. For instance, why not a lawsuit? Force these doctors to show why they faked their data.
Yeah.
Were they already on a foregone conclusion writing this story? Why did they make their changes? She shows you, she goes through early review drafts, and initially they didn't use the word people because they seemed like they knew that they couldn't apply this to populations. And then they added it in like 80 times in order to deceive, right? So I would love to see discovery in a lawsuit like that. And also, you know, I can tell when I go to look for a book like this, oh, Amazon doesn't want me looking. There are just signs, right? When you're not supposed to look for a book and you find it.
They suppress it in search results.
The algorithm is not her friend here. She has admitted that, you know, she's not allowed to advertise the book because of the content. So, you know, she just reached out to me, said, I think you're the kind of person who might actually read this book. And I said, sure, I will read it.
Yes.
And I read
it. You've come to the right show.
Yeah. And so I read it, you know, cover to cover. And I think that it's worth reading for all of us to see exactly what our, if you're Canadian, your tax dollars funded this book, funded this study that was used to hurt you. So, yeah, you definitely should be aware of this. All of us should.
It's like when Dr. Peter McCullough reached out to our show and he's like, would you guys want to read this book and his book on COVID? And I was like, yes, we would. And then we'll have Dr. McCullough on the show, and he's become a good friend of the show. So go ahead, David.
I was going to say, just think about the vulnerable position that she put herself in going against the government. We know what the Trudeau government is capable of. We saw with the truckers and everything, yet she didn't care. And she went out there anyway. And that's like the true definition of bravery for me, to see somebody that's willing to take on a whole governmental system in order to get real information out for us.
Well, they're censoring so many people, right? I'm watching this interview and I'm sitting here listening to Natalie's interview here. And I'm like looking at the chat room and people are like, oh, YouTube is censoring our comments. YouTube is censoring our comments. And yes, that's exactly what happens. In fact, the other day I went and, you know, holds comments for a review and go in and find that they've like censored hundreds of people's comments. We don't do that. That's not us. And so this is what we're up against. Her book, like Amazon won't let her advertise it because it would violate their advertising policies, so they can't advertise it. It's suppressed in search algorithms. Like, this is what we're up against.
Black Tie in the chat says, request it your local library. Make them order it and see if they do.
Do it. Yeah. Again, it's called Fisman's Fraud. Go buy it on Amazon. You can read it, obviously. That'd be great. And then, or just donate, and then donate it to your local library also, or force them to like order it so that people see this book in local libraries. And that would be great to see this rocketing up the charts, the power of Redacted. I would love that.
And I would be surprised if a library wouldn't order it, because like it's been my experience. I used to work in the university library system way back when at Ball State. But that's like the biggest proponents of free speech that I've ever met are librarians. Mm. They're the kind of people that are like, we need all information out there. And, you know, it's up to you, the reader, to decide. Like, I've never met a librarian that's like, we should be censoring free speech.
Yeah.
That's just my hot take on it.
I have. I volunteer in libraries. I've heard some of that.
Anyway, people are in the chat are saying, what's the name of the book again? What's the name of the book? I'll give it to you one more time. And then you can go back and rewatch the segment as well. But it's Fisman's Fraud, F-I-S. M-A-N.
And specifically what she wants us to see is the study that the media ran away with that was funded by Canadian taxpayers through the government, called the Impact of Population Mixing Between Vaccinated and Unvaccinated. And what they did was just fake a model, even though they had readily available population data, and used it to say that the unvaccinated were a risk, a threat, a public health threat to the vaccinated. And the media and and politicians said, well, then you can't get on a train with my daughter who's vaccinated. You can't go to the gym. You can't go to school, even though the data at the time started to really show that the vaccine was not affecting transmission of COVID-19. We know that now. That aged poorly, but these doctors have since been promoted. So, yeah, read it for yourself and let us know if you think that your government is operating with hate science. I hate the term.
And I think, Philip, you just got the asset here, right? You want to show it?
Or no? Yeah, I had pulled it. I'm trying to work on it. I had already pulled it, so hang on. I'm working on it so we can get it. My thing's not working super well.
Thank you so much.
Your thing's not working, huh?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Yeah.
Give me a second.
All right, we'll show you one more time.
It's not an easy thing when we switch these things out, so we'll try doing it like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, so here is the book title if you're looking for it.
Yeah, there it is.
Like we said, the algorithm in bookstores are not her friend.
Well, so many people in our chat just said they went and bought it. Way to go. Agent 07 Melissa just went and bought the book. Awesome. Caroline says Amazon Canada is selling the paperback for $25.
Oh. Okay.
You know what? For this mom's hard work, for this doctor's hard work, I'd pay $25 for this book in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And get it in hardback. Get it in a nice hardback book and then take it to your local library so we need more books like this, certainly.
Take it to your local bookbinder and have them make you a special leather bound copy with an engraved front on it.
Yeah.
All right, we've got more news to get to. So our next interview here, we're not going to be able to do it on this platform, on YouTube, okay? So where we are going to go next is the link at the bottom of your screen. We are going to continue and do this next interview with Major Thomas Haviland, United States Air Force retired, who found out about something that was happening with embalmers and said, you know what, I want to find out more about this. This is another hero, okay? We just had one hero. Here's another hero for you on this evening. But we cannot do this interview on YouTube because they will block us and ban us. So we are going to do it exclusively on this next platform here and down below. That's where we're going to do it. And we'll also be streaming on X as well. And so we're going to talk about these blood clots. And why mysteriously have they been creeping up over the past few years? We're going to hear from embalmers, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about how you can right now get some nice savings on your cash that's maybe sitting in your bank account right now. And our friends over at Moomoo, our favorite trading platform, have just rolled out. They have a limited time right now. This new cash sweep account, which will give you 8.1% interest for a limited time. Just right now, the 3% is added on to the 5%, so that's just a three-month limited part of it. But the base price is 5.1% interest. The 3% is just a three-month bonus right now if you open an account and make your initial deposits in this account. Now, it's a trading app, so you can buy stocks if you want. You can buy commodities. I personally invest in like metals companies and commodities. Some people were asking me last night, you know, what do you invest in? I do. I invest in uranium companies. That's what I like to do. I like to invest in the companies that are actually doing the hard work and pulling the minerals out of the ground that we need to live our lives. You know, I'm not one of these climate activists who, thinks that we can operate on solar farms and wind. So I invest in things that we need, like uranium. And I invest in gold and silver. And you can do all of that inside of the Moomoo trading platform. But the best part is when you open an account, you get 15 free stocks just for opening the account. And any of the cash that you're sitting there waiting to deploy to make an investment, like for instance, the Fed has their big meeting tomorrow. So I'm not deploying any capital right now. I'm going to wait until they speak tomorrow. And what will happen with interest rates over the next 24 to 48 hours? Are they going to lower interest rates? Are they going to raise interest rates? So I'm not deploying any capital. I'm sitting on my powder. I'm keeping my powder dry and I'm waiting. But in the meantime, that money is earning interest in that cash sweep account. So anyway, the best way to do it is go to redacted.inc/moomoo. Sign up today. Get 15 free stocks when you sign up. Again, redacted.inc/moomoo. Get 15 free stocks when you sign up. All right, everyone. So we're going to say goodbye to our YouTube audience tonight because our next story we have to do on this platform right here, a free speech platform, censorship free. So good night, YouTube. Thank you so much for being here. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. But for those of you that want to watch this next interview about what these embalmers have been finding, you want to come over and join us here. So good night, YouTube. All right. Hello, Rumble. Nice to see everyone on Rumble, as you guys are always here, and we don't have to worry about censoring anything over here. So good to see all of you guys.
We're free.
We're free.
Let's do some armpit farts.
It feels good to be unshackled. And by the way, we're doing some interesting things with Rumble that I'm very excited about. So hopefully I'll have some more stuff to talk about here soon with our friends over at Rumble. Excited about that. But anyway, so yeah, we're going to get to that interview in just a second with Major Thomas Haviland. Some amazing work on looking at these embalmers who have found these fibrous white blood clots over the past few years. And we're going to dive deeply into that data in just a moment. But first, we have a store. We should tell you about our store because did we find out, guys? Did we get a confirmation?
It'll be available Thursday.
Thursday.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't check my text during the show. So we have some new merchandise over in our store, redactedstore.com. You can pick up, of course, the non-pacifist peace extremist t-shirts, the I do not comply t-shirts. One of our, I think our top seller is the I will not comply right now. Also, friends don't let friends watch mainstream media. That's another great one, one of our big sellers. But we've got a new shirt rolling out on Thursday. We're really excited about this. I'm really excited to support the farmers. And maybe we'll do a little teaser tomorrow night on the show. But go check out redactedstore.com if you'd like to support independent journalism. We don't mark the prices up at all. We try to keep them just right around at cost of printing these things. So again, t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, supports the show, helps us keep the lights on here a little bit. And it's also a way to kind of give back and show your support for the show out and about. And people ask you, hey, I watched that show. One of our viewers the other day said they were at a grocery store and they were wearing a redacted hoodie and someone came up to him and said, you watch Redacted? And it was two redacted friends meeting in the wild.
Love it.
Philip, we should start a dating service for redacteds.
Redacted. I'm in.
Redacted Rebellion.
It's date Philip at Redacted. That's anybody interested.
So go check it out, the store, redactedstore.com. Well, something very strange has been happening over the past few years, something that the mainstream media is suppressing and trying to hide. Embalmers, yes, the people that prepare dead bodies for funeral services, are reporting the same thing across the world, that when they are examining the body, these embalmers are noticing something very strange, these white fibrous blood clots. Many of these embalmers have decades of experience. They've never seen anything like it. So what in the world is going on here? And how do we even know this? The reason we know this is because our next guest, Thomas Haviland, is a retired major in the U.S. Air Force. He's a data analyst who's interviewed and surveyed hundreds of embalmers in multiple surveys over multiple years to gather this data. Major Haviland joins us now. Major, great to see you. First of all, thank you for your service to this country, and thank you for what you're doing here.
Clayton, thanks for having me on the show to talk about this very serious topic.
Absolutely. So I want to dive into, first of all, how this sent off alarm bells for you, why you decided to do this. You've just now completed your second year survey of embalmers, okay? So where you send out and ask them, what are they seeing on their table when they're preparing a body? You've just wrapped up your second survey. You did this last year with the first survey, interviewing hundreds of embalmers. But what gave you the idea in the first place to even do this?
Yeah, I watched that movie Died Suddenly that came out the week of Thanksgiving of 2022, premiered Monday of that week. And to refresh the memory of your audience, it's about an hour-long movie, and about half of that movie is devoted to these six or seven embalmers that said they were finding these strange white fibrous clots in their corpses, like I'm showing here in the audience. And what's interesting about that movie, I know there were some problems with it, but at the 13-minute and 15-second mark in that movie, an amazing statement was made. An embalmer from the state of Indiana, a Mr. Wallace Hooker, was lecturing at an Ohio Embalmers Association conference in Columbus, Ohio, on the 26th of October, 2022. And he was lecturing to a room of about 100 embalmers. And he showed them photographs of these strange white fibrous clots that he had been pulling out of his corpses for the last couple of years. And he said, by a show of hands, can you tell me how many of you are seeing these strange white fibrous clots too? And he said almost the entire room raised their hands yes.
Wow.
He then asked him, wow, when did you start seeing these? And they all agreed it was in the middle of 2021 after the safe and effective injections came out. So I know those
safe and effective injections. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever else was said in that movie, that was an amazing statement. It's either true or false, right? Either those embalmers raised their hands or they didn't. So I got up the next morning after watching the movie and I said, you know, I don't think any reporter is going to chase after this story. So I decided myself to call the Ohio Embalmers Association. They're located in Cincinnati, Ohio. I talked to their president, their vice president, and their secretary. And I asked all three gentlemen, did you happen to be in the room at the time those embalmers supposedly raised their hand saying they're seeing these clots? Well, none of the three of them happened to be in the room at the time. However, the vice president, who runs his own funeral home about an hour north of where I live in Dayton, Ohio, and he does his own embalming. A lot of funeral directors do their own embalming. He says, Tom, I'm seeing the white fibrous clots too. So I said, wow, I now have an official officer from the Ohio Embalmers Association corroborating what these six or seven embalmers in this Died Suddenly movie said they're seeing. So right there and then I decided, hey, I need to do a survey, a nationwide survey, which I then later turned into a worldwide survey to see just how big this phenomenon was. So that led me to the creation of a worldwide embalmer blood clot survey that I administered, like you said, last year, which had three key results to it, Clayton. The first key result is it corroborated the Died Suddenly embalmers. 66%, 119 out of the 179 embalmers in that survey said they are indeed seeing the white fibrous clots. The next thing is that they agreed, the main consensus of the embalmers were that the clots started for them in the year 2021 after the rollout of the safe and effective injections. And the third and maybe most shocking result of that first survey, Clayton, was that up to 50%, some of these embalmers are seeing these white fibrous clots in up to 50% or more of their corpses. So this is not a rare phenomenon. Yeah, it's a common phenomenon amongst the embalmers.
And are they able I know they're not pathologists, right? So this is, I want to get into this before we get onto more of the survey results here, because we've reported on our show over the past couple of years how there's been a number of instances of individuals dying suddenly at a young age, et cetera, where normally a coroner would call for an autopsy. And certain states and certain cities have different rules about when an autopsy is called for. We featured families who wanted autopsies of their young daughter who died suddenly, but they were not allowed to have an autopsy. So pathologists have not had a chance to do, I think, as many autopsies as we would like to see with this. So I think it's then skipping the autopsy process and then going to the embalming process. Am I right about that?
You're absolutely correct. I think a lot of times, unless foul play is suspected, that there's not a thorough autopsy done on these bodies or no autopsy done at all. And then the embalmers are the ones that find these white fibrous clots and other things we'll talk about, such as microclotting in their corpses.
So yes,
unfortunate.
Can we talk about then what are these white fibrous clots? Do we know what they're made of?
Richard Hirschman, the embalmer from the Died Suddenly movie, who gave me this particular vial here, has also sent vials of these off to laboratories all around the world, one of which is Dr. Ryan Cole, the famous pathologist from Idaho. And Dr. Cole has looked at the clots under a microscope and determined that they're made of basically three things. Fibrin, which is formed in our own body. We all have fibrinogen in our blood in a liquid state that when clotting occurs, it turns into a solid called fibrin, and it's colored white. There's also platelets in there, which are colorless. And then also this amyloid or misshaped or misfolded protein. Amyloid spelled A-M-Y-L-O-I-D. It's just a fancy term for a misshaped or misfolded protein. When our body starts clotting, we all have a natural enzyme called plasmin that breaks down normal clotting in our blood vessels in the body. But when the clot is misshapenly folded, like strange misfolded amyloid proteins, it then becomes difficult for that enzyme plasmin to attach, and then the clots tend to persist and grow. So that's what we think happened. We actually had 44 embalmers in the year 2020, which is the year that we just had COVID, but we had no safe and effective injections yet. 44 of those embalmers said they saw the white fibrous clots in 2020, that year. So we believe the spike protein from the virus itself can be dangerous and cause the formation of these. But many more of the embalmers starting in 2021 saw an explosion of these white fibrous clots in the year that the safe and effective injection started. And what we think is happening there is, if you remember, the shot was supposed to stay in your upper arm, in your deltoid muscle. and produce just enough of the spike protein to elicit an immune response for just a couple of days to a week, and then its job is done. It's got you ready for COVID. But we know now that's not what happened at all, Clayton. That shot goes all over your body, turning your whole body into a spike protein factory, and it could be, it's been found doing that for months at a time instead of just a few days to a week. So the scientists that I've talked to believe that it has supercharged the formation of these amyloid protein white fibrous clots. So it's not a good situation.
So in that first survey, 50% or more of the corpses that they were dealing with had these white fibrous clots in their body.
It was an average of about 30%, but with some embalmers seeing it in 50% or more of their corpses. But the overall average was about 30% in the first survey.
And then in the second survey, which you just wrapped up, so this is a big one. This was, you've expanded the survey results that just wrapped up about 2 weeks ago. So let's get into what you found this year. You think, okay, well, those safe and effective shots, maybe they're dwindling down. Fewer and fewer people are getting them. We know the boosting numbers are really low. So maybe we've turned the corner on this, right? And I'm not drawing a conclusion. Yeah. I should point out, I guess we should say that I'm not saying that that's caused this at all. We really don't know, right? It could be total coincidence.
We have to say that correlation is not necessarily causation. But man, I see an awful lot of correlation going on here. I'll let you know that.
Right.
Before I get into the results of the second survey, I want to mention that we had 269 responses to this most recent survey, which was 90 more responses than we had to the last one, which was great. I'm glad we got more responses. But in the way I got the responses, I could tell that there may be something kind of, I won't say scandalous, but something kind of interesting happening. I started the survey, this most recent one, on the 8th of December of 2023, and it just finished here on the 8th of January of this year, a couple of weeks ago. But after the first 5 days of sending the survey out, Clayton, I checked my SurveyMonkey collectors. I had only received about 14 responses to my survey. I said, oh, this is terrible. I'm not getting many responses at all. So I contacted the 30 state funeral director associations that I sent the survey to. By the way, I sent it to 1,700 funeral homes around the world directly. I used a two-pronged approach. So I used a bottom-up approach by sending it to 1,700 funeral homes directly. I also sent it to 50 national, state, and regional funeral director associations around the world, each with hundreds of members under them. I picked the top 30 U.S. states to send the survey to by population, figuring I'd catch most of them that way. And when I sent I called each of those funeral director associations on like the 13th of December, asking them to please send out that survey that I sent you last week. And I talked to either their funeral director association president or a secretary or somebody else in their office. Well, God bless the Pennsylvania Funeral Directors Association. They did exactly as they asked. They forwarded my email with the link to the survey to all their embalmers. And I know that because the very next day when I got up, I checked my SurveyMonkey collectors, and I had 93 responses from the embalmers, and they were all from one state, Pennsylvania. The next day I got up and I had another 32 responses from embalmers, and they were all from one state, Pennsylvania. So in 2 days, I got 125 responses from a single state. And it told me basically two things, Clayton. First of all, it told me that embalmers, they want to tell you what they're seeing in the embalming room if they feel like they have the permission from either their funeral director boss or their funeral director association president. But it also told me something else. Hey, I sent that email to 29 other funerals, state funeral director association presidents, and didn't get that kind of response. So it's telling me there's a suppression going on at the higher level, and that a lot of embalmers probably never even received the survey because they were never forwarded it by the funeral director association presidents or the funeral directors themselves.
Well, I would love to hear from any embalmers, any funeral directors that are watching this show right now, to leave a comment below this video, and we will watch to see how many of you actually got the survey. Did it ever come to your inbox? Was it suppressed and kept from you?
Yeah.
And we'll be able to, I think, drill down more deeply on these results. Yeah. So
I know the embalmers in British Columbia didn't get it because I got an email from the president of the British Columbia Funeral Directors Association telling me they were not going to participate in the survey. You know, I would have loved to have had responses from cities like Vancouver, other places.
Right.
Also, the National Association of Funeral Directors of the UK did not, they responded to me and said, we're not going to participate in the survey.
Why
we'll let the British Institute of Embalmers.
Why do you think they turned this down? Why do you think Vancouver, you know, British Columbia turned this down?
I've got two reasons, Clayton. Number one, I think a lot of these funeral directors and the Funeral Director Association presidents, who are usually funeral directors themselves, you know, they pick one of their own to be the president of their association. I think many of them may have mandated that all their employees take the safe and effective injection, you know, including their embalmers. So would you want to participate in a survey that might show a link between the safe and effective injections and these white fibrous clots and microclotting and all these other issues that embalmers are seeing? You might be setting yourself up for a liability suit, right?
Right.
Also, we know from the CDC vaccination tracker site that 80% of Americans, adults over the age of 18, took at least the first two jabs. So there may be some cognitive dissonance going on a personal level with these funeral director association presidents and the funeral directors who may have, you know, taken injections themselves, may not want to find out the answer to the survey. Just a couple of reasons I'm speculating.
Now, this is maybe a leap here, but I'm asking here, we don't have the, again, autopsy results here, and pathologists aren't handling this. So are we able to draw a direct link between these white fibrous clots and the reason that they're laying on the table in the embalmer's office? I mean, a direct correlation between these white fibrous clots and death?
The embalmers that I talked to are convinced that the white fibrous clots are forming pre-death. They believe they can form post-death as well. There's been some speculation about whether they're only forming after death or whether they're forming before or both. The embalmers I talked to seem to believe they're forming in both. And one of the reasons they say that is they pick up bodies that are very warm, only an hour or two old, a lot of times, and they're doing the embalming, they still find them riddled with these white fibrous clots. That they say that there's no way they could have formed in just the hour or two since they passed. So they're, and also there's been actual documented cases of white fibrous clots pulled out of living people. Oh. So that's pretty good proof right there. Yeah.
I know you're not a doctor, but to ask you this question, I mean, our bodies naturally pass these things out? I mean, if people watching right now are thinking, my God, do I have this in my body? If anyone out there went and got one of these safe and effective things, and these are in the body, can our body naturally remove these, work on these, break these down, or is this something that we're stuck with for years?
There are scientists that are working on the answer to that. I know Dr. Peter McCullough, if you go to his mm-hmm. website, he has a protocol of
like detox
medicines that could be, basically something to detox the spike protein. Basically, is what it says. It's a spike detox.
He's been very outspoken on the spike protein. He's and a good friend of the show, Dr. McCullough. So okay, if anyone's concerned about that, please seek out Dr. McCullough's website for that information on that. I want to get more into the second survey though, because you got a lot of responses here. These 269 responses, 73%. Can you break down the numbers of what these embalmers were seeing in this second survey? And let's go through that data.
Sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right. 73%, 197 out of the 269 embalmers that responded to the second survey said they were still seeing the white fibrous clots in the year 2023. We then asked them, the next natural question, of course, is, well, in what percentage of your corpses are you seeing these clots? And the average is about 20%. They're seeing them in about 20% of their corpses. The good news is, Clayton, that's down from 30% in our survey last year. So, and that may not necessarily be a vindication for the safe and effective injection, because you would think maybe as you get further and further away from people having their last injections, and most people had their last injections way back in 2021, most people passed, only 20% of Americans took the BA4, BA5 bivalent Omicron booster in the fall of 2022. And I think even less, only about 15% of Americans took the latest XBB 1.5 booster that came out this last fall of 2023. So you might expect if less people are taking the injections that you'd see less corpses with the white fibrous clots in them. So it's not necessarily good news for that. Yeah.
Going through this survey though, there were some really other disturbing things. Microclotting. Now I hadn't heard about this before, but what is microclotting, which is different from the larger white fibrous clots, right?
Yes, it is. And the embalmers don't describe it as that, Clayton. They describe it as what looks like coffee grounds or dirty blood coming off the drainage of the corpse as they're trying to get the formaldehyde in and get the blood out of the corpse. they say, hey, this blood looks different than it did before. It's got these like little coffee grounds in it. And the staggering thing here, Clayton, is that 212 out of the 269 embalmers, which is 79%, saw this microclotting phenomenon in their corpses in 2023. And they saw it in an average of about 25% of their corpses, one out of every four. Now, this is something prior to 2019, prior to the pandemic, embalmers would see very rarely in their corpses, maybe less than 5%. I think one embalmer to me that he saw sometimes in chemotherapy patients that had heavy chemo, but it's a very rare. So if it's happening in 25% of the corpses now, that's a quintupling, you know, five times.
Huge.
The amount. Yeah. And this could be just as dangerous a phenomenon, right? Because microclotting occurs at the capillary level and basically blocks the exchange of oxygen at the lungs. And then the carrying of that oxygen to all the major organs of the body, you know, including the brain, including the eyes that have very small capillaries. So it could be just as dangerous as these large white fibrous clots that we think are causing strokes and heart attacks. Not a good thing.
One of the other really troubling parts of this survey is about infant death. Can you talk about the number of infants that, and we've covered here on the show, of course, the rise in funeral homes, of course, having to request smaller caskets over the past few years, which is incredibly troubling. But can you talk about these infant deaths in this data as well?
Yeah, I guess the good news is that only 20% of the embalmers saw an increase in infant deaths, whereas 80% did not. But I think there's a few ways to explain that, because not all embalmers do a lot of handling of infant deaths. Some embalmers work for funeral homes that actually charge for funerals for infants. Others provide that service for free, you know, out of compassion for the grieving parents, obviously. So the ones that provide for free will handle more of those infants. I've also been told by some of the embalmers that it seems like within the last couple of years, there are a lot more cremations being done of infants than burials, than funerals. And of course, if that's happening, then any evidence that there's any clotting or anything problem with the infant is destroyed, right, during a cremation. Also, I've been told by the embalmers that a lot of the hospitals now are starting to not pressure the family, but they're offering for the family when this tragedy occurs in the hospital. You know, this is a disaster, right? The husband and the wife, they're expecting this very happy occasion, and then it turns disastrous, and they're in shock. And the hospital will say, hey, we'll dispose of the remains for you, so you don't have to worry about it. So I can assume that a lot of the parents are probably saying, yeah, I just want to make this all go away. Oh. So obviously, if the hospitals are disposing the remains or the remains are being cremated more, then embalmers won't see this phenomenon. But for the 20% who said they are seeing more infants dying, they've seen an increase of about 25% increase of infant deaths in 2023 compared to the years prior to the pandemic. So that's pretty alarming, right, of 25% rise in infant deaths on average.
And are they also showing signs of these clots?
From what I understand, yes, they are. And this is really unfortunate. And we also have evidence, you know, that spike protein from the safe and effective injection is getting through, like, mother's breast milk into the child. Oh. I believe they've also found this spike protein from the safe and effective injection in the delivered placentas that, you know, women have after they have the child, they deliver the placenta. So this could be a very, it could be a very tragic thing if indeed the spike protein is getting through from the mother to the infant. It's just disastrous.
Crime of the century, and there's no one's in prison for it. Which age groups did you also see? This is part of the second survey data too, the sort of the striations of age. Were we seeing a higher concentration in certain age groups of these deaths showing these white fibrous clots?
Yeah, we asked the embalmers, did you see an increase in 2023 over the years prior to COVID in any particular age groups? And they responded positively in all the age groups, unfortunately. The longest bars, the embalmers that responded the most were in the older age groups. That wasn't too surprising to me. Like particularly, I think the longest age group was like the 66 to 80-year-old age group. But what did distress me a little bit, Clayton, is I saw a pretty long bar in the 36 to 50-year-old age group. And a lot of embalmers said they were seeing an increase in the grape jelly clots, white fibrous clots, and the microclotting in that particular age group. And that's, you don't usually associate that age group with, you know, heart attacks and strokes. Usually people don't have heart attacks and strokes until they get in their late 50s into early 60s, not when they're 36 years old to 50 year old. And this kind of dovetails very closely with the insurance data that Edward Dowd's been looking at. He's been looking at insurance and death and disability data. Right. And he's noted in the years of 2021 to present a tremendous increase of death and disability in that age group. So that my results in my survey dovetail very closely with Edward Dowd's results. And it's, you know, it's quite disturbing.
And do we know the common pathology in that age group? Do we know what's the cause of death across that age
group? Mostly strokes and heart attacks. Yeah. And there's probably a lot of myocarditis going on as well, as our friend Dr. Peter McCullough knows.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not a good situation.
Unbelievable. Well, what's next for you in this research? You're going to continue survey next year as well? And hopefully, what about the, I mean, are you hearing from the government at all that they would want to expand it, right?
Yeah, I would like not to have to do a survey next year. First of all, I'm doing the work that the FDA and the CDC should have done. Immediately after I had the results tallied up on the, and the survey closed on the 8th of December, the very next day, the 8th of January, on the 9th of January, just a couple weeks ago, I sent the results, including a PowerPoint presentation, all my SurveyMonkey files that I had, all the documents I used to gather the information. I sent it all to the FDA, the CDC, and the NIH, just as I had done last year, hoping that they'll do something with the data this time. Now, in that same email that I sent to them, I also sent to some of our people that are concerned, I call it on our side of the issue, like Dr. Peter McCullough, Steve Kirsch from the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, Andrew Bridgen, the member of parliament over in the UK, the one the people see standing by himself talking about this issue.
He's in a nobody else room is in the chamber. Exactly.
I've sent it to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and his folks did a nice article about the results of our survey in their Children's Health Defense Defender. I also sent it to Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she used that information, I think, a couple weeks ago when Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Ryan Cole, and Dr. Kurt Milhound were testifying in front of a congressional panel. One of the very first questions Marjorie Taylor Greene asked was, hey, what about these white fibrous clots I'm hearing from these embalmers? Is that real or not? And Dr. Ryan Cole set her straight. Like I said, he has vials of these too in his office from Mr. Richard Hirschman. So he said, oh, they're absolutely real. And So I don't know. You know, Clayton, I'm worried. I'm worried because our regulatory agencies, the FDA and the CDC, seem to be captured. They don't seem to want to investigate this problem. And meanwhile, Big Pharma is planning to have shots going out in the future. They're trying to get approval now for other mRNA-based lipid nanoparticle technology injections, such as for RSV virus, the flu, shingles, etc. So I am very concerned if this technology is what's causing all these microclotting and white fibrous clots, these issues, this could be really disastrous for humanity if we allow more of these types of products to be put on the market. I'm calling for a moratorium, and I know others are around the world as well, of these safe and effective injections until they can prove to us for sure that they're not responsible for all this unusual blood clotting and all these other things we see like myocarditis, nerve damage, turbo cancers, miscarriages, etc.
No, I am with you, and our show is with you on that. A moratorium until they can actually prove that they're safe and effective. Right. They call them safe and effective. Well, prove it to us. We'd like to see that data. And they haven't been able to provide it to us yet. So and then you see the massive $1 million ad campaigns that are rolled out on national television during football games, you know, with Travis Kelce and, you know, go and get, you can get your flu shot and this other shot simultaneously. And they're marketing the heck out of this thing because they want you to do this yearly now. And we don't know that they're safe and effective. And that's sadly the case here. And to your point, you mentioned a few minutes ago about the CDC and the FDA being captured. I think, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. writes about that in the very beginning of his book, The Real Dr. Fauci, and the revelations, of course, that these organizations are captured, that they have patents, they're tied directly to these organizations that are making money and the biopharmaceutical complex. So they are captured. They are regulatorily captured. They are not independent, and they don't seem to have our safety at their top priority, do they?
No, they don't. And in addition to that, I think our medical system is also captured to a certain extent. There's carrots and sticks for doctors out there. For example, I saw in an article just recently, Anthem, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield Anthem. I think they provide an incentive of if a doctor gets 75% of the people he has takes care of to take the safe and effective injection, he gets $250 per injection. For every, so if he's got 100 patients, then that could be $25,000 extra dollars in his pocket for just recommending that they get the safe and effective injection.
Yeah, that's
there's also legal. Sticks out there, as you know, too, because if they speak out against the safe and effective injection, they can lose their license, have their board certification taken away. Right. So this is it's a tremendous problem we have.
I couldn't agree more. Well, I want to thank you for the work that you've done on this, shedding light on this, because to your point, I don't think anyone would have been able to do this, no one was doing it. And the reason that we know about it is thanks to your work here. So I wanted to give as much light to this as possible. And where can people contact you, embalmers that want to reach out to you and provide data and information? Is there a website, a link that people can go to and to share their information with you?
Yes, they can reach me at thomashaviland@sbcglobal.net. And I'd love to hear from embalmers. Whether you're seeing the clots or not, I want to know what you're seeing.
Great. Well, we'll make sure that they get a hold of you and send that email to you with any information to flesh this out. Major, great to have you here on the show. Thank you so much for your work and shedding light on this story. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Clayton, for having me.
And thanks so much. Unbelievable story. And of course, the mainstream media will not cover this story. And it's been even difficult for us to be able to do the story because you can't do it on YouTube. Unfortunately, it really stinks that you can't talk about this story on YouTube. You can't talk about clots, even though you're not even mentioning the name of the vaccine or anything. No, they'll still get you. They'll still get you. That's what the corporate media funded by Pfizer will do to you. So thanks for sticking it out here with us tonight over on Rumble. We appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for subscribing. If you're new here and you haven't followed us on Rumble before, thank you so much. I mean, Rumble has just been an amazing platform for us for free speech. We're looking to really actually expand our presence here on Rumble. We'll tell you more about that, hopefully, in the coming days. We're excited about that. So anyway, thank you guys so much for subscribing here to the channel on Rumble. We really appreciate it. Please share this video. Share this interview with Thomas as far and wide as you possibly can to try to get this message out about what these things are doing to people. We appreciate it. So thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. We really appreciate you sticking it out with us. We know our time with Thomas went a little bit longer, but I thought, I'm just going to keep going. It's an important interview, so let's just keep going. So Thomas was fantastic. So again, thanks so much, guys. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time live. So please subscribe, and we'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Have a great night.